Welcome back to our final segment of the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Keith Nelson, Assistant Secretary of Administration and Chief Human Capital Officer at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Sally Thomas. Keith, could you elaborate a bit on your efforts to support specific alternative work arrangements such as telecommuting, and what other benefit programs are you pursuing to make HUD a federal employer of choice?
Glad you asked, Al. We're drafting a new telework policy, which is going through the comments process now, but we do have a pretty strong telework program right now. Currently, a little over 1,700 employees, which are about 20%, use telework, and we're looking at ways to increase that in a strategic fashion. We also offer student loan repayment as both a retention and a recruitment incentive. We just doubled the money for that benefit. We are looking at entering a pilot exchange program with some state housing agencies. We find that we deal with the states quite a bit through our grants and other matters, and we find out that that there's a pretty good training tool. If you give us one of theirs and they give us one of ours, we end up learning each other's business a little better, and we found some states that are interested in participating on that, and we'll roll it out as it makes sense. We've recently completed some major renovations to our 40-year-old headquarters building. We have a brand new child care center. We think it's as good as any in government or better. We've installed a nanny cam on the advice of the parents who want to be able to log in and see how their kids are doing every day. We know that the results are there because our old child care center was in the basement, windowless, and we were probably the only one in D.C. that had no waiting list. In fact, we were only about 50% capacity, and the current one is where it should be with a long waiting list. We've also upgraded our cafeteria. The old cafeteria was used by, I think, less than 15% of the workforce, and then when we did some analysis of those figures, we realized a lot of them were just going for a Coke, and they weren't really eating there. We've upgraded it. We have a Starbucks wireless cyber cafe. We have a Subway sandwich and some other places and a real nice seating environment, and it's been a big hit since we opened a few months ago. Speaking of employee benefits, it was kind of an odd thing, but we had our employee benefits center located in Chicago, where we have a strong federal presence, but most of our people are in Washington, D.C., certainly. So we're in the process of transitioning and transferring that unit to Washington, D.C., and we expect it to be more proactive and a better resource for our employees.
Now, Keith, you're a member of the Chief Human Capital Officer Council and also chair of the Subcommittee on Learning and Development. Could you talk to us a little bit about your membership on the council, your role on the subcommittee, and in particular, we're interested in hearing about the mission of the committee, what some of the key training and development best practices are, and whether or not you've been able to pull them into HUD to incorporate into your programs.
Absolutely. As you probably know, the Chico Act of 2002 established the Chief Human Capital Officers Council to advise and coordinate the activities of members' agencies, such matters as the modernization of human resources systems, improved quality of HR information, and legislation affecting human resources operations and organizations. Recently, Director Springer of OPM helped celebrate the 5-year anniversary of the Chico Council, and we kind of recognize some of those original Chicos, of which I'm not one of them, but there are a few out there. And it's been really interesting to see how the Chico group have evolved. My subcommittee, the Learning and Development Subcommittee, we set annual goals that really kind of help us share best practices throughout the federal organizations. This may have been looked at up front as maybe a scorecard issue. Oh, if something comes out of here, then OPM is going to slap it on the scorecard and keep people away from green. And that isn't the case at all. It's been a very, very well-received opportunity for people to share best practices and for us to learn from each other and move forward. One thing that was pretty interesting we've had is a session on return on investment for those with limited training budgets, which is, I think, everybody but maybe DOD. We have to make sure that our dollars really go in the right directions. And so we saw how some federal agencies were doing that. And another thing that's pretty neat, but not a lot of federal agencies are doing, is kind of using the virtual worlds and Second Life and the multiplayer kind of games, role-playing games for training. And we recently had a session using some of those virtual worlds and showing what federal agencies were doing there.
Now, Keith, there's much talk about commercial best practices in the government, particularly in the services areas such as human resources. Given your CIO background and experience at labor and also your private sector experience, what emerging technologies do you see that hold the most promise for improving the federal management of human resources?
Well, if I had to boil it into one thing, Sally, I would say we need the people in human resources to not focus on processing. They need to be consultants and thought leaders and strategic advisors to the managers who need to use them. Let the computers be processors, and that's the direction we're moving toward. E-Recruit is an example of that, where it really kind of slices and dices all the apps for certain jobs, and we've rolled out at HUD about 40 jobs using this E-Recruit tool. So it helps rate and rank all the applications in a certain way, and it requires a little human checking on that, but rather than go through the wading through the papers that we normally do, let the computers kind of take a cut at that first. WebTA is another kind of private sector aspect, and HUD is probably very late to the game in adopting an online TNA system, but we do have 1,100 timekeepers. That's a lot to deal with, and we're going to shrink that to 200 or fewer over time once we roll out an electronic time and attendance system. Another initiative that we're doing electronic is EOPF, official personnel folders, and turning all those paper again into a searchable database that employees can click on anytime they want to review their file.
So, Keith, if we continue to sort of look into the future, how do you envision HUD's human capital needs evolving over, say, the next 2 to 3 years? And how do you envision your office will need to evolve over that same period?
Well, Al, I think, like I said, the HR specialist of the future is going to be much more customer service oriented, much more advisor, much more out there dealing with the customer and adapting to their needs and providing counsel even before they know it. They're going to be trained in all the human capital and HR law and legislation and regulations. But they need to translate that into terms that a business manager can understand and be a real advocate for that individual as they try to move forward and be adaptable too. And let the computers kind of work on processing the papers. We're going to have our staff really deployed as kind of an army of consultants.
So really move into the high-end services then.
Absolutely. That's the future of HR.
So, Keith, you've obviously made a very successful transition from the private sector over to the government. You seem still very energized about the work that you do. What advice might you give to someone who's out there perhaps thinking about a career in public service in the federal government?
Well, I would say it helps with energy to have a brand new cabinet secretary with 7 months to go. Certainly, we're doing a lot of hard work between here and the end. I really would recommend public service to anybody. It may not have been the first thing that came to my mind, but I got to tell you, this has been such a rewarding experience, and I'm very pleased that I'm here and have this opportunity. And I would say that one day I think we need to have USA Jobs be on the lips and minds of just about every graduating senior. Just like they may look at Monster or Career Builder now or Hot Jobs or any of these other sites aimed at all the commercial sector jobs, they should be thinking about government in the same way because I really tend to agree with OPM puts out there in their ads. What have you done in your job today? There are so many fabulous jobs in federal government. It's really it's really a great opportunity if you look deep.
That's a wonderful perspective. Thank you. Unfortunately, Keith, we have reached the end of our time now. I want to thank you for your dedicated service to our country, both in your roles at DOL and now at HUD.
Absolutely. I would just say for anybody interested in hearing more about HUD's human capital strategic plans or our succession plan, it's all available at HUD.gov. We try to make that available for anybody. We send it to the Hill. We forward it to all of our employees and managers. And I just want to say one kind of moment that's a key moment in HUD's human capital history, and that is my deputy chief human capital officer, Barbara Edwards, who's committed 40 years plus to federal service, has announced her retirement. So I guess the retirement wave has certainly hit HUD now.
That's great. That's great. And congratulations to her. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Keith Nelson, Assistant Secretary of Administration and Chief Human Capital Officer at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. My co-host has been Solly Thomas, Associate Partner in IBM's Human Capital Practice. As you enjoy the rest of your day, please take time to remember the men and women of our armed and civil services abroad who may not be able to hear this morning's show on how we're improving their government, but who deserve our unconditional respect and support. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Albert Morales. Thank you for listening.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.